Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Monday, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. This is not officially a holiday week like last week, so we all need to get our act together now. So Saturday and Sunday, we have a bunch of playoff games. Then Monday, we've got Ohio State, Alabama, which I think is going to be a shootout because I don't think either defense will stop the other. I like Alabama, but I think it's really competitive. And Joy Taylor is joining me. The Buckeyes did me well on Friday. I did think they were the play. I thought Justin Fields, by the way, did himself well.
I was very disappointed in my pick and prediction, but very happy for Justin Fields.
Yeah, I think he's not going to leap Trevor Lawrence. People have to settle down. Trevor Lawrence is going to be number one.
Yeah, I mean...
Come on, let's stop. Yeah. You can lose to LSU and Ohio State. It's okay. But Justin Fields, I thought, secured himself over everybody else. I mean, to play Clemson, to hit on big...
Oh, I mean, and those over-the-top passes...
Were perfect. They were perfect
so
throws.
So impressive.
So I think he secured himself as the number two quarterback, and that's very exciting. Urban Meyer, Trent Dilfer later this hour. Well, we call it calling right, calling wrong. I have strong opinions. Sometimes I whiff, sometimes I don't. Here we go.
Where Colin was right?
Well, I've never done this before. I picked 7 out of 7 AFC playoff teams. I picked the Chiefs, the Bills, the Steelers, the Titans, the Ravens, the Browns, and the Colts. I got them all right. Now, you say, what about Pittsburgh? Yeah, in the summer I banged on him, but you remember we have the tape. September 10th, opening day, I said, I'm going to move them up to 8-8, and they will sneak into the playoffs. Now, they didn't sneak into the playoffs, but nonetheless, I've never done that. Every team right in the conference to make the playoffs. I also got 11 of 14. I had the Packers, Saints, Seahawks, Tampa. I still can't explain the Chicago Bears. I don't get it. I don't get how the Bears were way better than the Vikings. That one I don't get.
Where Colin was wrong.
Thanks, Doug Peterson. The Blazing Five went 2-3, so I finished the year 40 wins, 42 losses, 2 ties. I've never had a losing season. Between COVID, no preseason, I had an awful start. The first six weeks, I had a losing record. I think I had a couple of 1-4s. I was a mess. Could never catch up. And again, thanks, Doug Peterson, for tanking. I could have ended up 500 with that, but that's not the way it worked.
Where Colin was right?
I never bought into this nonsense that Tom Brady was a system quarterback because Josh McDaniels left New England, bombed with the Rams, bombed in Denver, and bombed this year. And I'm not blaming Josh McDaniels solely, but if the system's all about New England, why Josh McDaniels, the head of it, everywhere he goes without Brady, the system doesn't work. And Tom does. Tom had 40 touchdown passes this year. New England had 10. We're always trying to discredit Brady. Folks, you don't win 6 Super Bowls. Even if you have the best coach, he never had the best weapons. He never had the best running backs. He never had the best receivers. One year he had the best tight ends. He rarely had the best defense. It can't just be Tom Brady and Belichick. At some point, Belichick's now won 44-45% of his games without Brady. Too many people jumping on that he's washed. No, he's old, meaning he needs a little more help, but he's still great.
Where Colin was wrong.
Boy, that Adam Gase thing didn't work out for me. When I really figured out I was wrong on Adam Gase? It wasn't that Sam Darnold kept regressing, which he did. It was that Ryan Tannehill left him. And since Ryan Tannehill has started, he's an A to A-minus quarterback. Hell, I'd argue he's an A-plus statistically. Is that Tannehill has totally rejuvenated his career, and Darnold's gotten worse, even though Joe Douglas had a good draft, and they were a little better personnel-wise offensively this year. Last couple of years, worst offense. You know, I was always told he was a little, you know, poor man's version of Kyle Shanahan, and he was not.
Where Colin was right...
Well, before Tua's first start, I said, I worry there's no special. Boy, the last couple of 3 weeks, I worry about him. 1 touchdown, 3 picks, doesn't throw over the top. You know, he's accurate, and but I always feel like that's kind of a base. If you're not accurate, you have to be so mobile that for the first couple of years in the NFL until you get your accuracy right, Josh Allen or Lamar, you buy some time with your legs. I don't see the special. Now, again, going to Buffalo and beating these Bills who are red hot, good luck. But I'm starting to see what I worried about with Tua.
Where Colin was wrong.
Listen, Andy Dalton's not as good as Dak, but I thought yesterday he was especially bad. He was wildly inaccurate, and Andy Dalton has to be accurate. He can't give you any running. He's not going to give you a big arm. He's got to be accurate. I thought he was awful yesterday. Troy Aikman touched on it. There was easy stuff that he missed on. And 29 of 47, no touchdowns. The other thing is, he's 0-4 in playoff games. There's a Kirk Cousins thing here where he's never been big in primetime, and this was the biggest game for the Cowboys all year. I thought the game plan was bad. I mean, Andy was their leading rusher. But I thought biggest spot of the year, Andy Dalton was really, really off. And I picked the Giants Friday to win, but Andy was a problem.
Where Colin was right?
Said 6 weeks ago, best team in the NFL is Buffalo. It's not Kansas City. Did you see what they did to Miami's defense? Miami's defense is good. Top three in the NFL. Destroyed it. Destroyed it. Offensive lines playing better. Stephon Diggs, 76 catches now. He averaged 76 in his career. He had 127, 1,500 yards. Tops in the NFL. We get so caught up on Kansas City, we're afraid to criticize him. Kansas City was 7-4 through 11 weeks, then caught fire. Kansas City's not playing well now. Everything is working for this team. Defensive, brilliant young head coach, offensive lines offering protection. Josh Allen plays with the confidence of a Super Bowl winning quarterback. They're humming.
Where Colin was wrong.
The Texas Longhorns fired Tom Herman. Now, I just want to throw this out. I know he couldn't beat Oklahoma. I know that matters. I know he struggled with TCU. But he was 32-18 and 4-0 in bowls. You know what Dabo Sweeney was in a weaker conference his first 4 years at Clemson? 36-18 and 2-2 in bowls. He didn't have a good recruiting class this year, but he had three previous good recruiting classes. I get he couldn't beat Oklahoma. Guess what? Ask Florida. It's not easy. It's Oklahoma. And I know the losses to TCU sting. But I was shocked, and I'm happy for Steve Sarkisian. But folks, 32-18, 4-0 in bowls, and 3 of 4 really good recruiting classes. Listen, Sark, you talk about the cupboard isn't bare. Texas will win next year. I thought they pulled the trigger a year early. Like, I get it. If he lost to TCU in Oklahoma next year, okay. But I don't know. It didn't feel like man overboard yet to me.
Where Colin was right.
Never understood the nitpicking with Justin Herbert. Finished with 31 touchdown passes, rookie record. He was a four-point student, big, strong, and mobile at Oregon. I didn't know he'd be this good, but everybody was just, oh, he's mechanical. He got better at Oregon every year. He didn't throw to NFL receivers or have NFL backs at Oregon. He had NFL offensive linemen. I think sometimes they're kids. We just nitpick. It's like, from now on, if a kid is a four-point student, 6'6", strong with a huge arm and is mobile, he's probably going to succeed in the NFL. Like, every trait, every physical trait and mental trait was right in front of us. And Joy and I watched the Rose Bowl. We were like, yeah, that's going to work in the NFL. Everybody, he was a dominant player in the Rose Bowl, dominant player in the Senior Bowl, and everybody nitpicked him.
Where Colin was right.
I've loved Steph Curry since I saw him. I don't understand the lack of respect. He had 62 points last night. Second oldest player to ever score over 60 and the only player of his age to score 62. He's the greatest shooter ever. He's arguably the greatest ball handler ever. He's one of the smartest players that has ever played a professional sport. He's selfless despite being a dominating scorer. He gets along with everybody. He's coachable. And yet when you ask all these NBA stars about the best player, they always throw shade at him. Folks, he changed the sport. High school, college, AAU, and NBA basketball. International basketball looks different because of Steph Curry. Not even LeBron can say that, because you can't duplicate a lot of what LeBron does. He's just physically different. But I mean, last night, and as good as Dame Lillard is, Dame makes shots other players wouldn't shoot. He's just insane. But they're 3-0 when he scores over 30, and I think they're 0-3 when he scores under it. So it's not a very good basketball team. Like, he's the only scorer on that basketball team. Good stuff. Trent Dilfer is around the corner. Can't wait for the playoffs this weekend. I told you, I think Cleveland-Pittsburgh, I like the number. I like Pittsburgh's like -4. They've rested starters. It just all worked out for Pittsburgh. Now they get him at home. Ben is rested, veteran head coach. Good spot for Pittsburgh. And I cannot fathom Chicago going to New Orleans. I think the Saints have the best roster in the NFL. Trent Dilfer around the corner.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Go the extra mile in your very own upfitted Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. You could win in Fox Sports Radio's Ultimate Tailgate Rig Sweepstakes. Eligible until January 24th. I'll have the latest on Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer, I've been told, has been offered the Jacksonville Jaguars job. I've been told there are calls being made to assemble a staff. He has health issues. He's weighing it, family issues. I think it's a great job and a great fit. I'll talk about that later. First, Trent Dilfer, decade and a half in the NFL, a Super Bowl and a Pro Bowl. Fans of his high school football team as well in Nashville, Lipscomb Academy. All right, so you played, I didn't. That's obvious. Here's what I didn't like about Doug Peterson, is that I do believe for a young quarterback, wins matter, off seasons matter, and I thought Jalen Hurts against the great defense had put them in a position to tie the game with a field goal, had put them in a position to win that game, to have a real moment going into the off season, and I don't like how they took it from him. I don't like that at all. That's what bothered me. How's it land for you?
Well, that bothered me, and a lot of other things bothered me. I mean, I actually got angry when that happened because I put on my kind of football player team hat and remembered the years of sacrifice you make and the brothers that you have in the locker room that are sacrificing so much each week to get ready to play. And then I started thinking about what week 17 feels like to the center, to the defensive tackle, to the linebacker. That physically is putting his livelihood on the line each week, that at the end of the year, he's beat up, he's tired, he's dealing with 5, 6, 7, 8 nagging injuries, that he's going out there to put on the line for his teammates, and you're robbing him of a chance to win a football game. And I just think the whole thing was really, really ugly. And then I started thinking there's no way that this is Doug's decision, because Doug's a football dude. He's grown up around the game. He was a blue-collar backup quarterback. He was all about the team. He was all about the locker room. I think that's what's made him a successful coach early in his coaching career. I really believe that his strings are being pulled by the front office, that was not his decision. There's no way he would make that decision to do that to Jalen Hurts, to do that to the countless guys that at this time of the season, that winning a game matters. It doesn't matter what your record is. Doesn't matter what your draft status is. None of that stuff matters once the ball is kicked off. On a Sunday afternoon, a Sunday night in the NFL, you're trying to win a football game. Everything in the NFL is about winning the game that you're playing. It's not about what you're doing in the future when you're in that locker room. It's about winning that game. And you sacrifice a lot to win that game. And I felt really, really bad for those players. And I just can't believe that Doug Peterson would make that decision on his own.
Yeah, that's really interesting. They got a slightly better draft pick.
Nobody cares.
Yeah. Players don't. That's for
nope.
Sure. Yeah, players don't. So I here's my theory on Tua. It's probably wrong, but I threw it out. He had a very strong father into a legendary defensive-minded high school coach, into Nick Saban, into Brian Flores. And that's been his tunnel of football. Yeah. Don't screw it up. We'll get you there. Make these throws. And there are times I watch him and I think he's had that thing in his ear for 15 years of, listen, just get the routes that are, and I watch him and I think he plays safe. And I think he's more athletic than that. But is it possible that the world he's lived in is three defensive-minded coach, a very strong father, and there are times he hears that voice and he plays it safe?
I don't think that's crazy. I don't think that's bad. Tua plays the play the way it's supposed to be played. He is very much like Tom Brady this way, that he's very compliant. He wants to win the football game, and he trusts his coaching staff to put the plays in that they feel are best to win the game. And his job is to execute them. He doesn't go outside the box very often. Aaron Rodgers was very much like that early in his career. You play the play the way the coach designs it to play. You can only play that play. Like, I think it's comical that people are blowing up. Why doesn't he throw the ball down the field more? Are you watching the plays? Are you watching what plays are actually being called? There is nobody running down the field. There are no explosive opportunities. You don't have any playmakers. Pull up the Miami Dolphins roster, search by wide receiver, and you tell me one guy there that's an explosive playmaker. Devontae Parker's falling down on under routes and causing interceptions. So the Tua conversation is a huge conversation. I'm more of a believer than I was before the draft. People that are calling him a bust, people that are saying move on, are literally crazy. I mean, give this kid an offseason, a real offseason, OTAs, more talent around him, a training camp. How about that? Some preseason games and an offense that is a little more versatile. And I think you'll see the guy you saw at Alabama. If you don't think he can throw the ball down the field, I got a reel of about 75 to 100 plays at Alabama where he's ripping crossers, ripping posts, ripping hole shots. Third read backside digs against LSU on 3rd and 18. I mean, I can go on and on and on. The kid can do anything you ask him to do. You just got to give him the tools, the offense, and the time to develop into doing it in the NFL.
So, you know, I've said this, is that coachability matters. I think Lamar Jackson is clearly coachable. I do think he has nice touch, although I don't think he's an elite thrower of the football outside the hash marks. That's okay. He's not everything. I mean, Phillip Rivers made a career out of a lot of things he couldn't do, and he made a Hall of Fame to some career. And I look at Baltimore, and you played in that city. And here's why I love Baltimore this year. Nobody's talking about him. It's Buffalo. It's Kansas City. It's Green Bay. Last year, he's the MVP. And you could sense how tight this young kid got. And I look at Baltimore now. I see improvement with him. It's house money. I mean, even in their own division. People like the Steelers. Oh, it's the Brett. They're the third most talked about team in their division. I like this team going forward. Your thoughts?
I don't like. I love, for all the reasons you're saying. And the chip. You know, I was at that game in Baltimore last year when Tennessee came and upset them, and they were shell-shocked. And, they were sowing their oats a little bit going to that thing, too. They're pretty confident. They're pretty cocky. They've been punched in the gut. They've had to pick themselves up. They've had to fight their way in the playoffs, and they've had to reestablish who they are. And I think that's the most important thing that's happened with Baltimore this year is in the last 5-6 weeks, they have clearly defined who they are. They're a run-first football team. They have multiple ways of doing it, multiple ways of creating conflict in the defense. Then they'll throw the ball in the middle of the football field, and that's okay. They have multiple ways of doing it with tight ends, with wide receivers going down the middle, with crossers, with backs, that they're going to attack the middle of the football field. They're going to attack you right down the midline of your defense. In the run game, in the play action game, and most dangerously when Lamar, because you're so caught up in all the other stuff you have to defend, tucks that sucker and goes for about 40 on you. I love Baltimore now. I think they're a real physical, hard-nosed defense, and then special teams. In the playoffs, special teams is a huge deal. Nobody talks about it because nobody understands it. That's why you don't hear it talked about on TV very often. But it's a huge deal, and they have one of the all-time great special teams coaches. It's some of the best specialists in the NFL, and they take it more serious than most teams. So I'm very bullish on the Ravens right now.
So Tommy Brady had quite a December. You know, it's funny as I watch him. I said this earlier. I can tell how somebody's going to age based on their traits. Are they curious? Are they compatible with other humans? Do they eat right? Do they work out? Do they sleep? And Big Ben's traits are kind of legendarily average, and Tom's are spectacular. So, it's funny. I look at his arm strength, and I'm like, he always had a B-plus arm. It looks like a B-plus arm. Are you a little taken back by it, or is this kind of what you thought?
It's kind of what I thought. I mean, you can go back, and we were talking about the Bucks earlier in the year, and, you know, they hit a couple bad weeks there, and people are freaking out. I said, just give them time. I mean, give a vet, the greatest leader in the locker room of all time, one of the greatest players who's ever put on cleats, give him time to integrate with these teammates. Then they get Antonio Brown in the mix. It was also going to take time with Tom Brady and Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich to kind of find common ground. There is a process that goes on in the National Football League, and the ones that handle it well play the best football late in the season into the playoffs. Nothing about this surprises me. Not one thing. I think they are throwing it for more yards than I thought they would. I thought that it'd be a little more balanced. But this is a really, really dangerous football team. I mean, like the Ravens are in the AFC, the Bucs are in the NFC. They're a team that nobody wants to see. They're super aggressive on defense. Their schemes are a nightmare to prepare for. You're playing against the GOAT. You have all kinds of talented people that he's throwing the ball to. Oh, and by the way, if you sleep on them, they can run the rock, and they're pretty physical up front. So, again, the Bucs and the Ravens are probably the two parallels in both divisions that none of the division winners end up wanting to, and none of the conference leaders want to see them in the playoffs.
Finally, you'd have played in a lot of regular season games and some playoff games. Greg Jennings talks about this all the time. It's a whole different thing. You know, it's like playoff hockey does not look like regular season hockey. You can sense it. The hits are more intentional. Give our audience a sense for a minute or two, Trent, just on the playoffs, how some shrink, some elevate.
Yeah, I think there's people that are built for the bigger moments, for one. They don't get anxious. They get enthusiastic about the pressure. The preparation is relentless. And the game please don't take this the wrong way, but in the football context is life or death. Everything matters. And there are certain people that can't handle that pressure. And you see those people fall apart in the playoffs. And there's other people that rise to the occasion. They love that. They love the intensity of that life or death in the football context. Drama. I think the physicality of it's another thing. Your body hurts. You're mentally tired. You're emotionally tired. Your families are tired. Everybody's worn out. Who has the grit? Who can pull it from deep within to find the little bit extra in the weight room? Guys are still lifting in the playoffs. Who's getting after their lifts? Who's eating right? Who's sleeping right? Whose study habits are getting better as the year goes on? It's a lot that you put into this time of the season, and some have it and some don't.
Yeah. Sleep, rest. Sounds like my mom growing up, and I wasn't even a football player at that point. Trent, great seeing you. Have fun in on the lake with your family, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah. Playoff sports is, you know, it's the difference between the Buick Open and the Masters. Nobody has ever talked about anybody, guy caved the Buick Open. Greg Norman caved at the Masters, like one of the great golfers of all time. It's like there is something about playoff football. You've not been there. Like, I don't like rookie coaches. Nothing against Kevin Stefanski. I get Mike Tomlin, you get Kevin Stefanski. I get Ben, you get Baker. Like, I just think that's a really good matchup. Sean Payton, Belichick.
Well, because it comes down to situations. And if you've never been in a situation before, you tend to lean to somebody who has a little more experience in the playoffs.
Yeah. By the way, Black Rifle Coffee, it's a company, veteran-owned coffee company, premium coffee to Americans. Purchase at www.blackriflecoffee.com/herd. The code will get you 20% off your purchase of your first coffee club order. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Dabo. We haven't talked much about Dabo yet.
Oh, boy.
He took some criticism for saying Ohio State was 11th in his final coaches poll this season. And after the Buckeyes shocked Clemson with a huge 49-28 win in the playoff, Dabo was asked if he stands by his ranking.
That had nothing to do with Ohio State. I said they were good enough to beat us, good enough to win the whole dang thing. I didn't think anybody didn't play at least 9 games. In my poll, that I wasn't going to put them in the top 10. So I wasn't going to change that just because there was a chance we could play them. So I don't have any regret about that. Only thing I regret is, I obviously didn't do a good enough job getting my team ready.
I regret nothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't have said it. I wouldn't have done it. But his reasoning, I guess, is that, you know, I think the ACC and the SEC, Joy, were bitter
I think there was some bitterness. Like, okay, I'm getting players hurt. We're going all in on this. And I'm not blaming Ohio State. Ohio State fans were furious at the Big Ten commissioner.
Yeah, but I mean, yes, but that's unreasonable. We're dealing with an unprecedented situation with COVID. There's no right or wrong answer. We may not find what the right or wrong answer for any of this is until 10, 20 years from now, maybe more. We're still in it. We're still in the situation.
Well, it's interesting.
So, like, to be mad at them because you're playing less games, like, that was their decision to make, that they're in charge of their conference, which is why you and I talk about this all the time. There needs to be a CEO of football. Of college football. Like, there has to be somebody who's kind of getting everybody on the same page, and then it wouldn't matter what Dabo said. It would just be his opinion. And really, it actually was just his opinion.
Look at these throws.
Justin Fields was incredible. It was an absolute... you know what it felt like, Colin? It felt like fight night.
Yeah.
It felt like you were watching history. We talk about this all the time, what it's like to be at a big fight in Vegas. You know you're never going to experience this again. Even if these two fighters fight again, they're new fighters. It's a new situation. Maybe they had another fight in between and they're not the same fighter. This was so unique. And then all of the energy and all of the animosity towards Clemson and Dabo for Ohio State to have a win like that, because it was over. Like, it was over, and you felt like it was over.
Well, I think Alabama-Ohio State is, you're going to see a lot of points, because I think Nick Saban acknowledges you can't stop anybody anymore. I mean, Nick Saban's never stopped Trevor Lawrence. He scores on him. So I think Ohio State has the quarterback, the wide receivers, the backs, the weapons to score a lot on Bama. The question is, what will Bama's offense do to Ohio State? I could honestly see 48-42 and not be shocked at all.
I will say, though, Ohio State's defense was very impressive.
It was. Remember on Friday, I said I didn't like Clemson's O-line, and I thought Trevor Lawrence was hurried. I just thought he was off.
They did an incredible job.
Yeah,
and Ryan Day said it right after the game. Like, they deserve a lot of credit. We're going to talk about Justin Fields. We're going to talk about Dabo, but Ohio State's defense was very impressive.
They made Trevor Lawrence, like LSU did last year, they made him hurry every throw. And even Tom Brady, when he's hurried, is not as... if you watch Trevor, he was unsettled. And by the way, this is what happens. If the people knocking Trevor Lawrence, he's lost two games to LSU and Ohio State. Folks, you're allowed to lose to Ohio State and LSU in college football.
Yeah, it's just...
And not lose your draft spot.
Take a chill pill. So the Jags fired head coach Doug Marrone. He had led the team to a franchise worst 1-15 record this season, which also secured them the first overall pick in the draft. Marrone took over as the interim head coach late in 2016, and after leading the team to an AFC title game in 2017, the Jags then had three straight losing seasons with three straight last place finishes in the AFC South. We kind of all certainly saw this coming.
Yeah.
With the Jacksonville Jaguars, it's also now an active rumor that Urban Meyer may be heading there. It's his job if he wants it. Now, here's what's interesting to me about this job, because a lot of people feel like this is a really good job. So Shad Khan, this is according to Michael DiRocco, he's a Jags report for ESPN. Shad Khan said he had roster control in 2020, and he will make sure a GM coming in knows that he will keep that control for now, at least. And then he clarified he wants to be a part of the conversation with the coach and GM on personnel and contracts, but he has final say.
Who has final say?
Shad Khan, the owner.
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
I don't like that at all.
Yeah, that's not it. So, billionaire thinks he's smarter than football GM. Not interested.
No, now, I would not. If I'm going into a situation like that, I need full control over all of that. Like, I, as the coach and GM, actually, the coach and the GM need to have the final say, not even just the coach.
So, Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones, there's this reputation that Jerry meddled. So, if you go back to the first 3 years of it, Jerry didn't, because Jerry spent every penny he had on the Cowboys, and Jerry had to get the business right.
Right.
So Jerry was on the other side of the building for the first 2 to 3 years. Jimmy had total control. It was when Jimmy started winning Super Bowls that Jerry said, hey, this is my toy. I want to have fun. That's the rub. That's the problem. But Jimmy Johnson, for the first 3 years, was on the football side of the building, and he called every shot. If Urban Meyer gets this, and I got first year on the job, I got billionaire guy, like, that's not...
I mean, for business decisions, for COVID decisions, and even maybe in final say on contracts, like, they're the ones writing the check, sure.
Right.
Personnel decisions?
Zero. I'm not interested in your opinion
at all. I mean, that's, I just don't think that's a recipe for success in any business at all. Just do what you do best and hire people who are great at what they do and let them do what they do best. It's very,
you look at the history of great owners. Robert Kraft does not tell Bill what to do on draft day.
He is, at least to our knowledge, he has meddled one time, and that was with Jimmy Garoppolo. And that worked out.
And by the way, Gail Benson, owner of the Saints, never bothers Jeff Ireland and Mickey Loomis, and they probably draft better than any team in the NFL because she's not going, I like the tight end from Missouri. That's cool.
I mean, how did that work out for Dwayne Haskins and the Washington football team?
Dan Snyder wanted Dwayne Haskins. The coaches didn't.
But they have the final say. It's their team. Finally, the Jets also parted ways with their head coach, Adam Gase, after two seasons. Gase was tasked with turning around a franchise that hasn't been to the playoffs since 2010. A great year. Had a good defense that year, 2010. But instead, left the Jets with back-to-back losing seasons. He also led the team to a franchise worst 13-game losing streak to start 2020 and finished with an overall record of 9-23. Interestingly enough, Steve Sarkisian is going to be headed to Texas to take over for Tom Herman. Bruce Feldman is reporting that Nick Saban is considering Adam Gase or Bill O'Brien
to replace
Sarkisian.
Well, the advantage to being Adam Gase and Bill O'Brien and working with Nick, they've been head coaches. Nick likes to hire coordinators who have been head coaches because they understand his role. So Jim McElwain, right? If you go back to it, Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian. So when a head coach understands the volume of the, he'll be your coordinator, but he understands what Saban's going through. And I think Saban really appreciates, because Saban tends to meddle on the defensive side. It's his defense. Offensively,
yeah,
he wants a CEO, and a guy that's been a head coach, now a coordinator, it's a great fit.
And, you know, Joel mentioned that Sarkisian was kind of in place to replace Nick Saban. So whoever comes in that position, if they do well, could be, you know, heir apparent to the Alabama dynasty. So that's actually really a great job. Now, what the Jets are going to do is a whole nother conversation.
Good stuff. Urban Meyer Jags, I'm going to discuss that coming up next. Joy Taylor with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Good to have you in. We were going to schedule Urban Meyer at this time, but Urban is not comfortable answering NFL questions. Totally respect that. He is rumored to be offered the Jacksonville Jaguars job, so he's not comfortable answering those questions. And frankly, in my career, I've only ever had one rule with guests. I can ask anything. Bobby Knight, I declined an interview at ESPN with Bobby. He wouldn't answer the questions I wanted to answer. I love Urban. I've known him forever. Totally respect him. He's not comfortable answering those questions, but I'm not comfortable bringing him on and not asking those questions. I think I have a certain duty and responsibility to the audience behind an Ohio State question to ask Urban Meyer stuff. So I'm good with him. Hopefully he's good with me. He's been great to me through the years, but I can't bring coaches on or anybody on and not have a full slate of questions I can answer. And so he's not comfortable. I've been told, here's what I know. I've been told it's his job if he wants it. He's got health issues he's worried about, so I can't speak of those. I think he'd be great. Pete Carroll is what I would say. He projects as Pete Carroll a little bit, where first two or three years he would mop up in the draft because he's recruited all these players. He really has a heartbeat of college football personnel that nobody in the NFL does. He's also a great personnel eye. And he also is going to inherit Trevor Lawrence. Jacksonville also has a little bit of a college feel to it, more than an NFL town. Miami's a pro sports town. Jacksonville's a college town. I went there for the Super Bowl week. They had high school football was on the front page. So it would be he has a house in Sarasota. He knows Florida. He coached in Gainesville. So I think it's a perfect fit for him. And I also think that franchise would have a rock star at head coach and a rock star at quarterback. And I think they need it. You know, the New York Giants win Super Bowls, and they're boring, and they still fill the stadium. Jacksonville needs something big, some gravitas, and I think Urban is the right coach. But there's health issues. They're real. Years ago when he left Florida, he had a massive weight loss and real issues to deal with. These were not media creations. It was frightening for him. So that's where we stand on that. I was told yesterday that calls were being made, assembling a potential staff. I don't know who was making those calls, but it was a staff where there was urban connections. I was told he was never really interested in the Texas job, which was a rumor. I didn't buy into it. I just didn't think that was going to happen. So that's where we're at with Urban. I wish him luck. I do think Ohio State-Bama is going to be a crazy shootout and all sorts of fun. I know he can't wait to watch that. And I think he would be an absolute home run with Jacksonville and a perfect fit. My only concern with Urban is he doesn't have, if you go start looking at Matt Rhule and Tom Coughlin and Pete Carroll and Jim Harbaugh, they all had NFL connections while they were in college. They either played, position coaches. Urban's got none of it. He's kind of catching up. And he's spent the last year, 2 years, catching up on the NFL. But there is a feel to the NFL that is just separate from college. You don't get Troy State. You don't get buys at the right time. Steve Spurrier bombed. Saban struggled. Most college coaches just are out of their element. That part concerns me. But I do think he's an offensive, creative genius, and that's where the sport's going. And he would put together a really good staff. But he wasn't comfortable answering NFL stuff. Totally get it. Maybe he's been offered the job. That's what I've been told. He doesn't want to answer it. So, and, you know, I've got to ask that if he's on. I will say this. Green Bay's win over Chicago. Bear fans are funny. Like, sometimes ask yourself, are you trying to convince other people of something, or are you trying to convince yourself of something? I see that a lot on Twitter with politics. You're not trying to, you think you're trying to convince me of something with Trump. You're trying to convince yourself, okay? I have nothing to do with it. I'm not changing my mind. The Chicago Bear fans, listen, Trubisky had no touchdowns and an interception yesterday against Aaron Rodgers' biggest game of the year. You put him on a stage with Aaron Rodgers, you tell me what it looks like. It's not close. With an offense totally catering to him. He's 1-6 against Green Bay. He is the fourth best quarterback, most talented quarterback in the division. I think Kirk Cousins has more natural throwing talent. You can go 9-6 with him, but it feels very Blake Bortles. The Jags were trying to convince themselves Blake Bortles was something other than just like an average NFL quarterback, and that's what Trubisky is. And Blake Bortles got to an AFC championship, and you can win games when the defense is great. You have a great running back. You have one star receiver. That's what Blake Bortles had, and a good coach. But Chicago, ask yourself this. Here's the simplest way. On the open market, if Chicago needed a quarterback, would they pursue Mitch Trubisky? No, they wouldn't. Bill Belichick needs a quarterback. He will not pursue Mitch Trubisky. Kyle Shanahan needs a quarterback. They will not pursue Mitch Trubisky. Chicago is trying to validate drafting him so high. And this is what general managers do. They draft it, and then they put pressure on the coach, and they want to validate the pick. And are you in this thing to win Super Bowls or not? Is that what you're here? I mean, I'm not talking. Some owners aren't. They just want to make a profit. But if you're a GM or a coach, you're in it to win it. That's not going to win it. You're not. Aaron Rodgers is going nowhere. So you got 5 more years of Aaron Rodgers, and he and Matt LaFleur get better every game they coach together. And I'm not even talking about you got to face Shanahan. I saw a story this weekend. Kyle Shanahan's moving off Garoppolo. Chris Morton's in reported, so he's going to get a quarterback, and McVay can coach, and Pete Carroll, and Russell Wilson, and I mean, you're seeing all these great college guys come out. Many of them are going to land in the NFC, and so, you know, anytime I hear Chicago Bear fan yapping on about Trubisky, I'm like, you're not trying to convince me. You're trying to convince yourself you can beat Aaron Rodgers with that, because I don't believe it, so stop trying to convince me. We had a great president or Trubisky thing. You're trying to convince yourself of that because nobody's buying it. And, you know, I wish him the best, but, you know, where's the it? Arm? Weak. Accuracy? Hit and miss. Athletic ability? Not bad. You can move around a little bit. You can move around. Nothing wrong with that. But a lot of convincing going on by Chicago fans and Chicago people. And you can just keep saying it all you want. Nobody's buying it. That you can't have Rodgers is a significantly better talent. Stafford's a significantly better talent. Then you can argue about Kirk Cousins, who I think is a better thrower of the football. He's not as athletic as Trubisky, and Mitch is athletic. He can move around. There's some Jalen Hurts there where you don't think he's a great thrower, but he can make some plays. And Matt Nagy's a smart coach, and their defense is good, and Allen Robinson's great, and they have to get another running back and keep adding to the offensive line. All right, Tony Gonzalez, last hour. We've got 14 playoff teams, and they come in all shapes and all sizes, and we'll talk about that coming up. Hour 3 on a Monday next.